Saram, dear listeners, welcome again to Vahini Satsang. Offering our loving salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet on the eve of Krishna Janmashtami. Today is August 22nd, 2019. Tomorrow, the whole world will celebrate the advent of the most endearing form that assumed the earth to teach us the path of love. It's so interesting that even as we are part of this program, even as we are discussing Bhagwan's message on the previous night of the birth of Krishna, just like it was at the time of Krishna's birth, Puttaparthi is now in a deluge. Beautiful rains all around, so full of freshness, reminds one of the time Krishna chose to be born. Amidst the thunder, amidst the lightning, amidst the waters, amidst the beautiful sounds heralding his advent. It was mystical, it was magical, and that's how it feels today. As you step out of your little room in Prashantinilayam, you see streams of water and your heart overflows with joy as nature is in its glory heralding the advent of its creator. Traversing this lovely journey of the Vahinis, we are now in the fifth chapter of Sandeha Nivarini. There's a very beautiful poem that Bhagwan has written in this chapter when the Bhakta asks Bhagwan about the concept of who am I. Swami says, before I get to that, contemplate on this poem. And in the last few episodes, we have spent time ruminating on the lyrics and the meaning of this lovely poem. In the previous two episodes, we did the first two segments of this poem, which is very long. It is very deep. It is very profound. At the same time, if you listen to the tune, it is very sweet. Originally in Telugu, what we are hearing now is the translation of it into English. So let's listen to the third segment of this poem, another four stanzas, and then we'll pray to Swami to guide our thoughts.
You earn continuously and store ceaselessly. And when the money so accumulated is lost, the way you create a hue and cry of your loss is indeed inexplicable. You dance like a caparisoned bull to the tunes of wealth and women, driven by the reins of lust and anger and the controlling ropes of sloth and dullness. What kind of pleasure you derive by troubling those who are subservient to you? But when you are faced with a problem as tiny as the leg of a fly, you get rattled uncontrollably. With wild gesticulations and blood-red eyes, you shout and jump with savage cries, as if possessed by the devil of anger, thus becoming a laughingstock for all.
So this is the part, the four stanzas, stanzas 8, 9, 10 and 11, that we will contemplate on today. And Bhagwan has blessed that we have Brother Srinivas Rao with us today. As many of you are familiar, he is a former student of Bhagwan's University, currently serving in the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Bhagwan Super Speciality Hospital in Puttaparthi. So Swami says here, you earn continuously and store ceaselessly, and when the money so accumulated is lost, the way you create a hue and cry of your loss is indeed inexplicable. Isn't that so interesting, brother?
Yes. Actually, I'm reminded of a story from the Old Testament.
Oh, okay.
Where one of our classmates had in fact narrated this story in front of Bhagavan at Kodaikanal. Like, you know, many people are very well-to-do. But when the Lord gives some attention to those people who are well-off also, then there are others who are not led to think that Bhagavan or God is caring more towards those who have everything. But little do they know,
yes,
that actually Bhagavan knows the heart of the devotee to whom he is giving that attention.
So people feel that people who have are getting more.
Yes. But it so happened during this time of Lord Jesus Christ, and Jesus was very favorable towards one of the persons who was very wealthy. Mm. So people thought that probably because he is very wealthy, the Lord is favoring and he is nice to him maybe. Then Lord wanted to prove why he is actually favorable towards that devotee. So then he wanted to prove it to them. What is so different about him? Though he is so wealthy, he is always grateful towards Lord. So, just to test him a bit, Lord deprives him of all the wealth and accumulations that he has attained. Mm-hmm. So suddenly he becomes a pauper actually.
Oh.
Then, even then, he said, the devotee, the person says, Lord, it is you who gave and it is you who took it away from me. I owe everything to you. I am still grateful to you. You are my Lord. So this is actually the story of three zeros, it's called.
Yes.
So this is the first zero actually, for all that you accumulate is taken away from you.
Yes.
And you are left with a naught.
Mm.
But still, you are actually, he is actually grateful to Bhagavan. To Lord Jesus.
I think what you are mentioning about the three zeros is so significant.
Yes.
I think Swami has mentioned this.
Yes, yes.
That are you really ready to walk on the spiritual path?
Yes.
Once you are on this path,
yeah,
you will have to go through this phase,
yeah,
where three things will become zero in your life.
Yes.
First, all your wealth probably will be taken away.
Yes.
Then your family and
then
relations.
Your family and relations.
Yes.
Then the third zero is your character is hit.
Yes.
Oh, when the Lord and himself, you know, accuses you baselessly sometimes maybe. Mm. It is just to prove to others.
Yes.
Say you
can
are,
you at that point
yes,
also?
Yes, at that point also you should say, Lord, I am grateful to you and thankful to you. And when the other devotees who saw this particular devotee who is so wealthy and well off and he lacked nothing in life, still he was so grateful to Lord Jesus, then it's then that they realized what is so special about him.
Mm.
So all this wealth and attainments, these are not the important things in life. If you have the love of the Lord, you have everything with you. So then, he said, these are the three zeros Lord has given to him. He has still chosen the Lord.
Mm.
And as he was, and my friend was narrating this story at Kodaikanal, there are so many people who are very rich there. And the Raja and the Rani of Zind, etc. They were thinking, oh my Lord, is this the test we are also going to be put to? And they are literally mourning, actually. Oh my God, oh my God.
Little scared.
Yeah, it is a little scary. And then immediately Swami wanted to do the, arrest the damage a bit little. And then he said, aisa nahi bolo pa, nahi to mere paas koi nahi aayega. Don't tell this, otherwise nobody will come to me. So all that you earn and attain will be taken away from you one day.
Yeah.
But we boast of it and live as though we are going to be always having and possessing these things for life.
In fact, I think when you walk on the path and when it comes to a phase where you have to leave it away, I think Bhagwan will work on us and he will take us to the stage where when this thing is taken away, it will not bother us.
Yes.
Because at that point in time, we would have realized what is the true dhana. Dhana is wealth, and the true dhana is sadhana.
Sadhana.
Sadhana is our true dhana, and sa is our sattvicness. Sa is our march towards sai. All the spiritual efforts that we make to go towards him, that is the sadhana.
Correct.
Every time we have reduced our anger, reduced our desire, reduced our jealousy, reduced our hatred, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madamasya, whenever we have done that, then we have increased our sadhana.
Yeah.
Whenever we have increased our satya, increased our love, increased our selflessness, increased our compassion, our sense of feeling for the other. And I think that is, those are the real true wealth that we are earning. So yes, when Swami mentioned that, okay, don't say it because people get scared, because then probably even before the journey has started, you know, you feel disheartened that how will I survive, you know, if all the wealth is taken away from me. But the thing is, you will come to a stage where this wealth will not matter to you so much. At that point in time, you'll be so happy to actually give away this wealth. You'll be more happy with the wealth that you learn by giving up this wealth.
Yes,
that is the true wealth. In fact, this really reminds me of Victor Kanu. Such a fantastic instrument of the Lord. When Swami was building the school for the poor children of Africa. If we know the story of Victor Kanu, he comes to Bhagwan in the late 80s, and one day in the interview room, Swami says to Victor, will you do something for me? And he says, yes, Swami. Swami says, build a school. He says, okay, Swami, I'll build a school. Where? Swami says, build it in Zambia. And he didn't know Zambia. He was from Sierra Leone. And Zambia is one of the very impoverished nations, and he was wondering how to get this done. So Swami, where will the money come from? And Swami says, sell your house. Swami says, and Victor says that at that point in time, he was reminded of that tale from the Bible where a rich man comes to Jesus and he wants to become a follower of Jesus, and he says, tell me, Lord, I will do anything that you want me to do. I want to become your disciple. And Jesus says, go sell everything that you have and come. And he runs away, actually. So Victor Kanu says that at that point, you know, I was reminded of that person, and I didn't want to be that person. Here was the Lord, and he was telling me, will you do this? If you want to do my work, go sell everything. And he wanted to say N, emphatic S, and he said, yes, Swami, I will do. But his wife was worried. His wife said, Swami, if that money is not enough, what do we do? And Swami says, then borrow from the bank. And both of them walked out of the interview room smilingly. And Victor Kanu went back to UK and he sold everything. He sold his house, he sold his car, he sold his belongings there. As he says, you know, pots, pans, everything he sold.
My God. Not many can do this.
Not many can do this, of course.
Yes.
And he goes to Africa, he goes to Zambia, and Swami further instructs him to set up the school in one of the poorest rural locales, actually. He wanted to set it up in a city so that, you know, there is access to infrastructure and there is access to more people and resources. But Swami says, no, do it in the most rural, most...
Backward.
Yeah, yeah, place of Zambia. And that's how he starts. And he has so many challenges, actually.
How?
The number of challenges at that point in time, as he says, because the people were very hostile. And even after the school was set up, nobody was coming to the school because it was not recognized. And it was just somebody from nowhere has come and he's started this mission. So people were... not cooperative at all. So he, when he put out applications for children to join the school, nobody came. So finally Victor goes and he picks up all the children who were not wanted by other schools. So he picks these so-called disqualified children who were supposed to be children who had low IQ and who were not able to perform. They were not good enough to join the school, the regular schools. He takes them and he and his wife Genevieve, they start this mission of Bhagwan with so much dedication. They put their heart and soul into the school, and just within a few years this school gets the title as the Miracle School of Zambia, because their students who were not wanted by any school in Zambia, they top in academics. And when you ask Victor, how did it happen? And he says, nothing. We just poured love. We just poured love into the students. So, well, that shows what can happen once you walk on that path with that joy and with that dedication. Yes.
See, it's an opportunity for devotees who have come to know of Bhagwan and learn to use their resources for a good cause, rather than having to lose it at some stage due to some mishap or disaster in life. This is a better way of offering all that you have acquired to the at the lotus feet.
In fact,
and that is put to a proper use in the society. The money you earn is to be given back to the Lord, actually.
Absolutely.
In fact, otherwise, you end up making a hue and cry of the loss. Is that better or is this better?
Yes.
There is a fulfillment in life.
Yes.
If you offer your you know, all your earnings and all your possessions for the use in the society, which Bhagwan has given the opportunity to this devotee.
In fact, someone said that all the money that is there in your bank after you leave the earth is the amount of effort you put which has given you absolutely no result, actually. That much of effort is actually waste.
Yeah.
Because it is left in the bank and you have left the world and it is of no use to you in any way.
Yeah.
And so it is a loss. It is a loss for you. It is a loss also because you could not make anything out of it for your life thereafter, hereafter. Here, you couldn't use that money to live here. You couldn't use that money to build something which will help you in the life to come also.
Okay.
So that way, that whole money is whatever you left is just a waste.
Yeah.
Coming to this context, whatever you're telling, when Swami says all these things, then we actually should know what actually is in Swami's mind, what is the actual purpose. So there's a very interesting study which was done in the university. What they did is, you know, Swami has given hundreds of discourses about what is the objective of the school, of the school, of the institute, what a student should do and all that. So there was a team which was made of senior professors and all the senior academicians. What they did was they picked up all the discourses of Swami, all the discourses, the convocation, then all individual room. Swami used to come and used to very often give talks to the students in the auditorium, all that, in hostel. So they So the big, it's a big, big collection of discourses of Swami. So they put all of them together and say, okay, what actually Swami wants from us? Fine. Like Swami says, this is not the true purpose of life. So Swami says, okay, let us see what actually Swami expects from us. What should we do? So then they found one statement which was like the underlying theme of the whole discourse of what Swami has told.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple. Like Swami never expects us to aspire something which is below the ultimate.
Yes.
That is what Swami says. So they found out that the vision statement of the university or whatever, what Swami expects all of us to do is very simple. Get self-knowledge, Atma-vidya, then get self-confidence, Atma-vishwasam, so that you have self-sacrifice, and get self-realization, Atma-sakshatkaram. It is not getting good degree or good behavior or good values or integrity, honesty. All these are byproducts. Swami, what he wants from us is Atma Sakshatkara. If you are not on that path, all these things will happen. Swami keeps telling all that.
Yes.
And then second thing, which they felt this was like an underlying thing, like a light leitmotif, was a person who passes out from here or who is a devotee. These three traits are very important. One is spiritually aware, socially responsible.
Yes.
And third is whatever job you do should be professionally sound. These are three things, three traits.
Professionally sound,
socially responsible, which actually come from being spiritually aware.
Yes.
Atma Sakshatkara. So, when Swami is, he has not left any doubt in anyone's mind what is our objective.
Yes.
It is Atma Sakshatkara, self-realization, that's all.
Yes.
So, if you don't do all that, Swami says in this beautiful song, all these things will come to you, this problem will come, this will happen. So if your goal is that, everything else falls in place. Because like Swami says, no, that is the core, spiritually aware is the core. If that is taken care, everything else will be socially responsible or being good in your job, taking work as worship, all these things will automatically fall in place. If you don't do this, you will be relentlessly behind earning and storing and then make a human cry when you don't get it. All these things come when you don't actually do that. I just thought of this when I saw this 3-4 poems, three-four couplets which were there. And one more interesting thing was that if you actually see, like Swami talks about the six inner enemies, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. So actually Swami is trying to put little bit. One is anger. He's talking about anger at one place. He's talking about kama, the desire in one place.
Yes.
Lobha, that is the thing to have avarice.
Yes.
Grab things. So actually Swami is trying to address all that in a very, humorous way. Trying to tell. Like, one interesting thing is this, you dance like a caparisoned bull. In Telugu it is Gangireddu. So the decorated Gangireddu actually is a very very pleasant thing to actually if you behold it. It comes on Sankranti. A villager will get one beautiful bull with all nicely decorated and take around the village and then take some money on that. So people will be so happy seeing the bull, they just donate something or give some. But here what Swami says is, you are pulled by the ropes of sloth and dullness. You are whipped by or the reins of lust and anger. You are getting all these things. But still in the external world, the kamini and the kanchan, that is the wealth and the woman. You see that and you are dancing like a caparisoned bull. Means you're feeling enjoyment in that.
Rejoicing
it's not
it.
Correct. It's not correct at all. And anyway, as you told about this Janmashtami, it's a very beautiful experience, just to put this in context. I remember I was in my MBA at that time, and the very sweet thing about Janmashtami is cow procession.
Yes.
Swami will give us this chance to become the Gopalas, get the cows, goes and come here, Swami will bless. So 2 days before that, there were a small group of boys who were supposed to take care of this and get them. Swami told, remember one thing. Whenever you take the bull or the cows. And get them to the mandir, be very careful. Don't try to pull the rope which goes through the nose. It's very painful. Don't do that. catch it by the rope which is tied on the neck, not on the rope which is tied on the nose, because the nose is very painful. So to keep it in context, he's telling that behavior that's so painful. And in this song, he's telling with that pain of rope, the rope, actually the rope of sloth and dullness.
Yes.
The rope is there, there is a pain. Even in that pain, you're trying to enjoy the sense objects, forgetting what bliss is.
Yes, absolutely.
Without that rope, you cannot be controlled also.
Yes, that's also correct. But here he says, you are controlled by the rope of sloth and dullness. You are not controlled by the rope of self-discipline or a good regimen or a good discipline or good sadhana. So, like, this is all what you should not do. Swami is telling all that here.
So, Swami used to say in Telugu, na, kramasikshana leni vidyarthi, mukkutadu leni yeddulanti vadu.
Wow, see.
Brekul leni basulanti vadu.
You should translate that, sir.
Yeah, if you, the an indisciplined student is like a bus without brakes and a bull without this nostril rope.
Nostril rope, yeah, the rope through the
that
nose.
That is tied to it. So, actually, only Swami can understand the pain of that bull, which is having that nostril rope tied to it. But at the same time, without that, it cannot be controlled also.
True.
Yes.
So,
so as Brother Bhargav said, and dear listeners, I want to let you know that Brother Bhargav joined us in between. I started off this session saying that it's been raining and Brother Bhargav was so keen to come, and because of the rain and the waters, he joined us a little late. Really, thank you so much, brother, for
it's making a pleasure. It's a pleasure
convenient
to,
come, Swami's grace, that you could join us. So, yes, so beautiful to talk about Krishna and the way Janmashtami is celebrated, and, you know, draw that parallel to the caparisoned bull that we are talking about here. In fact, as Swami always says, that the rains, we should be controlled, controlling the
controlling sensors, us.
And the sensors should not be controlling us. I think that is what
very beautifully
we learn
right
from our childhood. If you are going to Balvikas, this is something that will be told to you, and it takes so much time for someone to really practice that in their life. In fact, I remember in one discourse, Swami is telling that some people are accusing Sai Baba that he is converting all these children into Tyagis. You know, he's making off all these boys into renunciants. And Swami says, am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
You know, correct. Swami says, even if I give hundreds of discourses, you know, only one or two will actually follow that path.
Yes,
it is so difficult. It is not so easy for people to become renunciants. And people laugh at it. They think, they are thinking that as if this is the path to destruction. This is the only way to salvation. Correct. This is the only thing that will help you to lead a happy life, to lead a life of joy. And there, Bhagwan so beautifully says that there are four things which are very important for a spiritual aspirant. Swami says, bhakti, jnana, vairagya, and tattva. Swami says, these four pillars for a spiritual aspirant, I would want to call it BJVT, you know. BJVT. You remember this. The path of spiritual attainment is BJVT. Bhakti. Bhakti. First it starts with bhakti.
Okay.
So, Ami says, only when you have bhakti, can you get jnana, the wisdom. Bhakti will give you the knowledge, it will awaken wisdom in you that comes only out of love for God. The basic thing is you should have love for God. Only then there will be some awakening of the path and awakening of what is true, what is false, awakening of what is the real happiness that I should pursue. All that will happen only if you have love for God. So Swami says bhakti will lead to jnana. And once jnana comes, from jnana will emerge vairagya, renunciation. Renunciation will happen only when you get some idea of what is permanent, what is impermanent, where I should put my energies, where I should be attached, and where I should know to what extent I should involve myself. So all that discrimination comes once jnana happens, and that will lead you to vairagya, and there is no way to merge with the Lord until renunciation sets in your life.
So, Swami used to say that bhakti takes you to the doorstep.
Yes.
But mergence happens through wisdom and or jnana.
Jnana, yes.
You can merge because you should know it and then merge in it.
Correct, absolutely. So bhakti will lead you to jnana.
Yes.
Jnana will lead you to vairagya. And finally, vairagya will confer on you that tattva, that knowledge of the reality.
Tattva jnanam.
Tattva jnanam. That is what Swami says, bhagavatamu. Bhakti, jnana, vairagya,
and
tattva. Mu will lead you to moksha.
Moksha. Moksha. Okay.
Moksha, Swami says. Okay. That is what is bhagavatamu.
Bhagavatamu.
That's what Swami says. Bhagavatam chadute bhagavatanu. Means if I study bhagavatam, I'll become good. That's also one thing.
And Swami says that you accumulate all this wealth, but it is not this samsara, this wealth and this position, and Swami talks about here, you know, your wife and everybody. This is not what follows you. We go on accumulating this, thinking this is what will save us, this is what will ensure our comfort, this is what will give us happiness, this is what is so important for us to lead a life of joy. That's what we constantly think.
Yeah.
Swami says, but this is not what will follow you. Your samsara does not follow you. Your samskara follows you.
Swami says, wealth is lost. Nothing is lost.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt this samskara is very beautiful. Where Swami is saying, what follows you is your qualities. What you have done with the wealth.
Will come to you. Correct.
If you have got wealth, if you have got a talent, if you have got some resource, whatever gift that God has given you, it can be wealth of any kind. It could be the wealth of beauty. It could be the wealth of finance.
Ashtaishwaryam.
It could be the wealth of talent. It could be the wealth of knowledge. Yes. It could be the wealth of the gift to connect to people.
Yes.
It could be the wealth to be a great intellectual person.
Yes.
So whatever be the wealth.
Right.
Yes.
What have you done with this wealth to create that true wealth? Sadhana.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, very true, Bishu Brother. One more thing, like when you see this Swami told, remember the Bhakta that, no, you have to see the, first I will tell you a song, you try to learn from it, then I'll teach you what is who am I. It's a very, very inimitable way of teaching the masses.
Yes.
What is spirituality, what is that that special, very, very deep inner truths, how to connect to them, how to convey them. It's done very beautifully in songs and stories. Like I came across a story which I'm very sure all people who speak Telugu might be others also. Our grandmothers have told us umpty number of times. It's called Edu Chapal Katha. The story of seven fishes. And once I was reading that any of these stories or anything which we learn as a child and from our grandparents or from our elders, there is always a very deep inner meaning to it. Like Swami always says, Sanatan Dharma is not like Baba Black Sheep. It is not like you say Baba Black Sheep. There is no nonsense, nursery rhymes they call it.
Yeah.
Our stories and our small anecdotes which we have a lot of meaning. So I just came across one and I was fascinated. One of the speakers in our Vidwan Mahasabha and a couple of years back, he had mentioned about this story. I'll just tell you what is the story. It's a very sweet, simple story. The story of seven fishes is called. There was a king. We used to hear this from our grandmothers and grandparents. There's a king. He had seven princes. They went for hunting. They get seven fishes. So out of the seven fishes, one fish, they keep them for drying. One fish doesn't get dried up. So the prince comes and asks, why you didn't get dried up? So the fish will answer, see, what can I do? The haystack came in front of me. Because the haystack was in front of me, the shadow of the haystack, the sun was not able to dry. I was not able to get dried up. Then he goes and asks the haystack, why you didn't get eaten up? Why were you obstructing this fish? The haystack says, what can I do? The cow didn't come and eat me. So he goes to the cow and says, why you didn't go and eat? What can I do? The cow herd didn't come and tell me to eat it. They go to the cowherd. Cowherd, why you didn't go and tell the cow to go and eat the haystack? The cowherd says, mother didn't tell me to do it. So he goes to the mother. Mother, mother, why you didn't tell the cowherd to command the cow to go and eat the haystack? Mm. What can I do? My child was crying. I was going to attend the child which was there in my house. Mm. So goes to the child and asks the child, child say, why were you crying? Mm. Told, what did I, you know what I did? I put my finger in the anthill.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ant bit me, that's why I'm crying.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to the anthill, the ant, and asks the ant, the prince asks, ant, why you bit?
Mm.
What can I do? It put finger in my golden anthill.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do? I have to bite him.
Mm-hmm.
So the story ends and we all very, oh, nice, we clap and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, this person, one of the scholars, he had come and he had given a talk in Telugu. He gave a totally different meaning of this. It's so beautiful. It is like the seven fishes are the six inner enemies and the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if you keep them for drying in the sun of Jnana,
mm-hmm.
what happens? Even if the other enemies are removed, the mind with this, with its, what you call sankalpa, vikalpa, little bit here and there wavering, will still remain a little bit undried.
Mm.
So the prince goes and asks the mind, why you didn't dry? So what can I do? The haystack of ignorance came in front of me. So it's not one blade of grass. It is a haystack. Like Swami says, na, it's like a, like how a handkerchief has so many strands.
Yes.
Every strand, if you remove, then nothing will be left.
Yes.
So it's a haystack of ignorance, not one strand which is cutting the way from the sunlight. And then the cow is the cow of Jnanam.
Hmm.
The Jnanam, the cow of Jnanam has to come and eat the ignorance.
Ignorance.
The cow will, the Jnanam will come to you only when the cow heard the Krishna, whose birthday is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
When Krishna comes and tells you, go and eat, then only the cow of Jnanam will come to you.
Hmm.
Krishna will come to you only when the Divine Mother says, okay, now you go. This, the time of this bhakta has come, you go.
Mm-hmm.
Then only the cowherd will come.
Mm-hmm.
Why she has not told? Because one more devotee is pining so badly that she has to attend to that devotee first. You had only a query, a jignasa.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
A little interest.
Why it didn't happen?
Mm-hmm.
So, not interested in you now. He is crying. Mm-hmm. Why he is crying? Because he has put his finger in the anthill of samsara.
Okay.
Thinking that it is golden.
And he got bitten.
He got bitten by the samsara.
Mm-hmm.
So, the ant says, what can I do? My nature is to bite if someone puts his hand in my anthill.
Mm.
So, if you try to get into the anthill samsara, you'll get bitten.
Mm.
So, but the biting also is good.
Yes.
When you get bitten, when you start, then you realize, my God, mother, please help me.
Mm.
Then mother says, okay, I'll come and help you now.
Mm.
So, if I see the whole thing, it is so, so profound, the story. This, this way of teaching those profound, abstruse truths to the general public is through these songs. And Swami told, very important, if you remember last part of it, you carefully read this and try to understand this, you will get vairagya. Then I'll tell you what is who am I.
Absolutely. I mean, to understand the immensity of what Swami is telling, you have to develop some sense of vairagya.
Yes.
So, because you are someone who is asking the meaning of who am I. You want to know the tattva. Tattva cannot come unless vairagya is.
Actually, all these are pointing towards our blind spots, actually.
Mm.
In life, when we indulge in through our mind, we get covered up from the truth, actually.
Yeah.
So these are the blind spots that this through this poem Swami is pointing out.
Point, yeah, correct, correct. These are all correct.
Absolutely. In fact, as I also read this stanza, you dance like a caparison bull to the tunes of wealth and woman, driven by the reins of lust and anger and the controlling ropes of sloth and dullness. I could not help but think of the beautiful devotee of the Lord, Surdas.
Mm-hmm.
I think his life is such a lovely elaboration of transformation from a life steeped in samsara to a life moved towards sakshatkara.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are so many versions of how Surdas's life was before he took away his eyes. Of course, in the drama that was staged by the students in the divine physical presence, you see how Suridas was born with a very beautiful voice, and he grew up, he was raised by not his parents but someone else who found him.
Mm-hmm.
And that person was so happy with the halo that he saw around this boy, and to his pleasant surprise, the boy was singing so well. So very happily, he raises that boy.
Mm-hmm.
And after some time, another person comes to his house, and he identifies him and says, no, this boy looks so much like my uncle. And he says, must be my uncle's son whom I lost. And that is how Suridas is taken away, and he moves to Agra, if I'm not wrong, and there he starts singing, and then he forms his own ashram because he's all the time singing devotional songs and all that. And then one day when he's in the streets, and you know, his eyes fall on a lady, and when some people see that and they say, how could you do this? You are pretending that you are a holy man, and how could you do a thing of this nature? You are an hypocrite, and you are something outside and something inside, and they stone him and all that. And it's at that point that Suridas feels so pathetic about himself that he feels that I don't deserve to have these eyes. If these eyes cannot be focused on what they should be focused, then if they are getting so distracted by these little things of the world, then I don't deserve to have these eyes. And that's why he takes the stones and immediately pierces his eyes out of his body. And that is how Suridas gets that name, Suridas.
Suridas, yeah.
Well, while this is one story, there is also this story which is made into a movie wherein Suridas was so infatuated with a woman that even when it was raining, and there were things at home which needed his attention. His father was not well, but he just could not control, and he wanted to go and spend time with that lady. And so even though it was raining and everything, he walks out of the house, and he swims, and he actually he holds on to a hard object, and somehow he passes through the water. It appeared like a log of wood, and then he goes finally to that lady's home, and that lady is so surprised. How can you be so infatuated? How could you come like this? And it turned out that he actually held on to a not a log, but it was a corpse. Suridas was so mad in being with this woman that he is blind to everything else.
This is
so sometimes, yeah, people
Tulsidas, Suridas, yeah.
Correct. People sometimes ascribe this story to Tulsidas. We really do not know. But the message is very profound,
correct,
I feel.
Correct.
And at that point, that person, that lady says that if only, if you had this much intensity, if only you had a fraction of this much intensity for the Lord would have appeared.
Correct.
The kind of, you know, way you have come to see me now, it is so disgraceful. Why have you become like that? Something like that, she says. But the drama that the boys enacted, here you had, you know, Suridas takes away his eyes just for that act of looking at a lady with not proper vision. And after that, he starts singing. And after that, his songs were all the time songs of sorrow, because, you know, you have that very beautiful song, Meli Chadar Odh Ke Kaise. She says, how can I come to you with this body which is like a blanket, which is completely
dirty,
soiled.
Soiled and
soiled. So how can I go to you in soiled clothes?
Dwaare
tumhare meli chadar odh ke kaise. So I think And that is when you have Vallabhacharya Guruji comes and he says, you are all the time singing about the Lord, but why are your songs so full of sorrow? Why are you all the time in such a melancholic state? The one who's thinking about the glories of the Lord should be in joy.
Joy, bliss.
You are all the time in depression. And he says, what to do? My life is like this. I have done such a grievous sin. I don't deserve to live in this world. I don't deserve to win the grace of the Lord. Why will the Lord look at me? I am such a disgraceful person and all that. And that is when he guides him and says, no. The Lord is not like that. The Lord is so happy. The Lord does not look at your faults. You sing happily the joy of the Lord, and you know you will then experience him more bliss. And that is when you know the transformation happens, and you know he starts singing all these beautiful songs that we hear. Mohan ke mukh par bansuri, Radha ki man ki pukar. So all those beautiful songs come, and Surdas, you know, because he composes in Braj Bhasha. Okay. In the language that the common folk
and sing, yes,
could understand. And that is when people follow him, and he becomes the talk of the town. Everyone is all the time singing these lovely songs that every day come out of him. And he was like living with Krishna. He will wake up, you know, every morning and sing a song to wake Krishna up. And then he'll take Krishna along with him to the river. He will have food with Krishna. He will play with Krishna. So every time he was just singing and singing. And that is how his life was in those days. And of course, people got jealous, like it happens with every person.
Yes.
And there were scholars who felt that he has brought down the stature of the scriptures, because he's telling the story of Krishna and in folk language. You know, everything was in Sanskrit, and this person has brought down the prestige of our scriptures and so on. And there are always people who cannot stand someone getting so popular. And so that is how some people mislead him one day when he was going to the temple. They take away the stick from him and they ask him, are you feeling lost? He said, no, I don't feel lost. My Krishna is with me. Why should I get lost? Feel lost. And they said, no, you're going the wrong way. Go this way. This way is the temple. And they lead him wrongly so that he falls into a well. And that is when Surdas, without eyes, so he falls into that well, and he loses consciousness. And then once he's awake after a while, then he cries out to Krishna. You know, we have this very beautiful song, Hey Giridhar Gopal, Karuna Sindhu Krupal. And that is when Krishna comes. And Krishna takes him out of the well. And then Krishna spend some time, and Surdas says, who are you? You know, you're so nice. I love spending time with you. After so long, I'm feeling someone of my own is with me, actually. You know, what is your name? And then he says, my name, I don't know. There are so many names. You call me Shyam. No problem.
Okay, Shyam.
He says, Shyam, have you seen Krishna? Yes, Surdas. He says, and Shyam says, Krishna, where is the time for me to search? You know, there is no time. My cows, I'm a coward. My cows are all the time here and there. Some would have fallen in a well. Some would have gone off somewhere. I have to keep searching. There's no time only for me to search for Krishna. Oh, then Surdas says, you know, I always wanted to see Krishna. And then he says, Krishna says, Shyam says that, you know, I heard that you sing very well. Why don't you sing something for me? He says, okay, I will sing. And he sings. And then he says, no, I'm feeling so good. You know, why don't you stay some more time with me, Shyam? And Shyam says, no, I have a lot of work to do. You know, so many people are waiting for me. I have to go. Then he says, no, don't go. I'm feeling so nice to be with you. Please don't go. Then he says, no, I have to go. And then comes that very beautiful couplet which Surdas has written. Bah chura ke jaat ho, nibal jaane ke mo, hriday se jab jao to, sabal main jaanu to. You're leaving my hand and going, and you're thinking you're clever, Krishna. I'm pleading with you, don't go. You are leaving my hand and going and thinking you are clever. You go out of my heart. Then I will see how clever you are. Such a very beautiful sentiment. that Surdas' experiences, that, and of course you have the story where Krishna comes and Krishna actually says, I want to give back. Tell me whatever you want. You want your eyes? Anything you want, I'll give it to you. And Surdas says, No, I don't want my eyes, Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna, he says, okay, Krishna, just once, you just give me, I want to only see you. Only once. And then Krishna touches Surdas' eyes, and for that fraction of a moment, when he's looking only at Krishna, he gets the vision. And he sees the beautiful countenance of Krishna. And then he closes his eyes and Krishna says, Krishna, take away my eyes. I don't want my eyes anymore.
I don't want to see anything.
I don't want to see anything more. Please take away.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure you can have your eyes? No, I don't want.
Okay.
I have got what I wanted. I don't want my eyes again. And Krishna,
outward looking eyes will again distract you in life.
And Krishna again touches, and he's so happy now to be blind. And after that he sees the entire Bhagavatam in his mind's eye. And in fact, people, there's always a argumentation about Surdas' blindness, because the poets and the scholars, they say that this man cannot be blind, because look at the description of his compositions. Someone who's so blind cannot write like this. He cannot describe the colors, he describe the beauty, he cannot be so rich in his description if he's blind.
Yeah.
No, so there's always this thing about, was Surdas really born blind, or was Surdas really blind? There's always these discussions that happens. But that really shows that once you're not driven by the reins of lust and anger and the controlling ropes of sloth and dullness, what can happen to you?
What kind of pleasure do you derive by troubling those who are subservient to you?
Yes.
But when you are faced with a problem as tiny as a leg of a fly, you get rattled uncontrollably.
Yes.
See, the Swami used to give a very beautiful example of people, you know, have servant maids attending to them, their needs. So, in daily life, how Swami observes things, in the public discourse only one day he said, many of these people, they take the servant maids with them to buy the vegetables and carry the vegetables for them. And they'll be walking empty-handed. But after eating the same vegetable, they don't mind carrying that heavy load in their tummy. So, that's what I remembered when I read this. What kind of pleasure do you derive by troubling those who are subservient to you? Never forget that, actually.
Yes.
And Swami always gave, as you have seen in the hostels or in the hospitals also.
Yes.
Never treated anybody as a lowly, subservient persons.
Yes.
Gave most, whenever he visited the hospital, as you would know, he gave first priority to the people who are doing the cooking in the kitchen. They are the ones who are arranged the dinner, say, for all the boys and Swami. First go and inquire about them and give them padanamaskar and blessings. When he comes to the hospital also, he would always first make it a point to visit the dietary section, where maximum labor work is going on. And then he visits the laundry. And then it gives the padanamaskaram and blessings and photograph to the laundry workers. So, always be good to people who are doing the hands-on work.
Yes.
And Swami was always an epitome of servant leadership. Swami used to say, first serve them and then become a leader.
Yes.
Swami is always very, very particular about it. And I remember one more anecdote when I had come across some time back. Suppose George Washington, the first president of United States of America. Same, very, very similar experience. Being a leader, you should first know to respect the one who serve you or who are the ones who are working under you. So there's one incident where he will be going in a horse. And he was an army man, so he was a commander-in-chief that time. So one particular set of soldiers will be removing a log of wood, which was on the road, which was just blocking the road. And he sees the corporal, the officer who is just presiding over, supervising those four soldiers, was trying to tell them, please do it fast, do it fast. Mm. So he sees that and comes down and says, what is happening? They are trying to remove the log of wood. I'm just supervising them. Mm. So why can't you do it yourself? No, I'm the head. I can't do it. So he very silently, the story goes, he very silently goes, stands with them, helps them in removing the log of wood, and then comes back and says, if you need any more help, please send them to the commander-in-chief. He will come and help you. Mm-hmm. And just goes off in the horse. Then this corporal, the supervisor asks, who is this person? He says, sir, you don't know. He is our chief, actually. He is the army chief. And it seems he only later on becomes the first president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
So a leader, like always Swami says, servant leadership, should be first ready to serve and ready to be humble. Then only you will know the value of what this human capital is. You know the value of what human feelings are. Mm. Then you can be a good leader. Yeah. So, Swami always says this.
Absolutely. In fact, the other very important thing that Swami is telling here, when you are faced with a problem as tiny as the leg of a fly, you get rattled uncontrollably.
Yes.
What I'm reminded of is the distinction between reacting and responding.
Mm-hmm.
Many a times when something happens to our life, I think, which is very much applicable also for leaders, those leaders who wait and with patience and calmness respond to situations and don't react immediately are leaders who take meaningful, considered, good decisions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because something happens in the office, something happens in the home, something happens in the organization you're working, and you get angry and immediately you react.
Mm.
And that is when your decisions go wrong, because no one can take proper decisions in anger.
Correct.
No matter what happens, can I be calm?
Mm-hmm.
And can I spend little time to understand all dimensions of the problem and then take a considered decision, a decision which will do maximum good to maximum number of people.
Yes.
Mm.
But most often when people get angry, they are in that state where you are unable to think beyond one or two dimensions. And you want to react because you just cannot stomach someone has told you something or someone has inflicted or accused you of something, and you want to react, and that is when things go downhill.
Yes.
I think that is a very, very important trait that all of us, especially if we say that we are on the spiritual path, this is something so important for us in our daily life, because there will always be situations where we will get rattled, we will be disturbed. It could be something that someone has told us in our home. It could be someone has told us in the friend circle. It could be someone in our office. But how calm we can be.
You become a laughing stock, Swami says.
Yes.
And anyway, I cannot miss mentioning Krishna again, because tomorrow is sweet little Krishna's birthday. I remember once, before Swami's discourse, one of our elders had given a talk, and I think on a Janmashtami only, that, see, people say Ashtami and Navami are bad. They are not bad because Krishna and Rama were born on Ashtami and Navami. How can you say they're inauspicious?
Yes. Mm.
Then Swami corrects him. He says, no. If you see the life of Krishna and Rama, they had only difficulties. Mm. But they showed that even in difficulties, how you should be equanimous, how should be full of love, full of poise. Mm. So it is not that Rama and Krishna never had difficulties. Krishna was born in a jail.
And
right from the beginning, in the first 5 years, he had to vanquish so many rakshasas, so many demons, then Kansa, and then whole life was a saga of only suffering, if you actually see.
Mm.
But he was always blissful.
Yes.
Mm. Swami says that is the message which Krishna is trying to give. That is the message Rama is trying to give.
Yes.
Even if you are born on Ashtami or a Navami, which are actually so-called inauspicious days, but if you have a divine connection, everything becomes a song for you.
See, Swami also used to follow this Ashtami, Navami and this Rahu Kalams.
Yes. But there are times when Swami follows scrupulously.
Yes.
Sometimes he will just throw it
in the wind.
Yes.
He said, I am following it to set an example for you that you have to be careful about it.
Yes.
I don't need to follow.
Yes.
But he is setting an example living in human form like any of us. That is why you have to give attention to this, that there will be difficulties if you start any good venture on an Ashtami day or an Navami day and on Rahu Kalam times. Make sure that you avoid this.
Yes.
Otherwise, it becomes very difficult for you to face these difficulties.
And Swami's injunction has always been that ultimately, no time is auspicious or inauspicious.
Yes.
It all depends on what you do with the time. It all depends on your attitude. It all depends on... This is how I would want to look at it. Because Swami says that everything becomes good or bad depending on you making out of it whatever with your actions. So yes, to some extent you can be guided by these things, but after a while, if our thoughts are all the time centered on God and if it is a pure intention, then we should not be really worried about these conditions. If we are clear that our purpose, our goal and our intent is pure.
No, but see, Swami has told us, if you actually offer everything to me and say, this is God's work, this is not my work, I'm not doing it, it's Him who's doing it or I'm offering it to Him. Then He says, I will take care of it.
I will take care.
There is no auspicious inauspicious.
We are a time body bound by time.
Yes.
But when you go into the God zone, you are in the timeless zone.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
There, none of these things are binding
absolutely.
On you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That is a state you have to trip into, actually.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, we have to... Once you rise, once you...
No, that is the challenge of life, actually.
That is the challenge of life. True.
Otherwise, no point in coming and living every time in this body.
So if Swami has followed it, then it is an example for some people. If Swami has not followed it, that also is an example for some people. Everything...
No, because, I know. When you told me, I'm just reminded... He will always try to negate you and flabbergast you. No, this is not the one. I remember one Dashara, it starts the first day when you have a Kalasham. We put the Kalasham on a Dashara day.
Yes.
In the bhajan hall where you do the Lalita Sahasranama worship is done.
Yes.
So people are waiting that day. It was a Monday. 7:30 to 9 is Rahu Kalam. So people, we all, as if we know Swami perfectly. Oh, 9 o'clock only will come. Before that, he will not come. So all were like taking very relaxed. No problem. Swami will not come now. He won't bless now. He won't come and bless. To people's utter shock and astonishment, 8:55 he came and blessed. I remember I was sitting in bhajan hall that day. He came in and he saw there are two big clocks.
Yes.
What's the time? Swami asked. Swami, 5 minutes to 9. Oh, this is a very good time. He went and blessed. You were all shocked. Swami, Rahu Kalam. What Rahu Kalam for Swami? Swami is trying to tell you, please break those shackles also and become like me because.
Yeah. I mean, don't bind him to time.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Well, I think if you look at this four stanzas, when we have only touched, there is a lot of very beautiful thoughts that Swami has given in this. But the essence of it is, you have to put effort to rise beyond kama, krodha, lobha. I think those are the basic things.
Basic.
I think anybody in the spiritual path, I think, those are difficult, but at the same time, those are things that are uncompromisables.
The fish has to dry properly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Only the sun has to shine.
Sun has to shine.
For us to grow in His glory. Beautiful. Thank you so much, brothers Bhargav and Srinivas Rao.
Sairam.
So, dear listeners, as always, please feel free to join us in this beautiful session of exchanging our ideas, thoughts and insights on Bhagwan's Sandeha Nivarini. You can write to us, as always. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. We also look forward to your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. Wishing you all a lovely, beautiful, lively celebration of Krishna Janmashtami, so that we spend all our lives in the stream of love, in the stream of purity. That is the bliss, that is divinity. Let's pray that our lives are filled with that kind of sublimity. With this prayer to Bhagwan and gratitude at his feet, we bring this session to a close. Thank you so much. Sayonara.